From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, May 13th, 2008. Each week we explore news and technologies of importance to the geospatial community. This is Adina Schutzberg, and I'm joined by my colleague, Joe Francica. This week we try to put our fingers on key non-geospatial technologies that will impact geospatial solutions in the years to come. We'll offer our nominations in a moment, but first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Experience the geographic advantage with ESRI's ArcGIS server, a comprehensive platform for cost-effectively delivering enterprise GIS applications. Learn more about ArcGIS server at www.esri.com/directionsmag.
Well, I have to admit, Joe, that this was actually a really tough challenge that we put to each other. And I did come up with two ideas, and I'll go first. I'll be brave. The first technology that I want to propose that will have an impact on our little world isn't really a technology, but perhaps is a set of technologies. And the way I want to describe it is any technologies that require the user to do nothing, but yet create value. So that sounds a little bit vague. Let me give you some very specific examples. And I'll offer that we're just starting to see these appear in geospatial applications. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that we're going to see more and more of this. So let me give you some specific examples. So the big news in GPS navigation technologies is this offering called Dash Express. And the idea is that it's internet connected and you can do local search on it. And that's really not the part I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is the other part, which is the fact that as you drive around with this device in your car, you're actually providing information to the network about the speeds on the particular roads that you're driving on. And that information is shared with everybody else. So in a sense, all you have to do is drive around and everybody benefits from the collection of that information. And there's two other geospatial applications that are doing that same sort of thing. One is called Whirl, that's W-H-R-R-L, and it's a sort of a social networking mobile location application. But instead of having to rate a particular restaurant that you visit, this service actually keeps track of where you go and in a sense allows you to vote with your feet. If you go somewhere on a regular basis, it sort of gets voted on based on that. So again, you don't have to do anything, but all of your friends and others who use the network can gain some important information from it. And the final one is from a company called Mexins, and while you may not know the name of that company, you may know of their application called Navizon, which is a location navigation tool that doesn't use GPS but rather uses Wi-Fi access points. And what Mexins allows you to do is if you do, in fact, have a device that has a GPS, you can be part of their team that goes out and captures the information about the locations of these access points. And again, you don't have to do anything. You just go about your daily business, and you collect points, and then those points can be converted into dollars. So again, this whole idea of having the participants in the gathering of the information do absolutely nothing and yet benefit, I think, is something that we're going to see more and more.
So what led you down that path? Was there something you saw on the market that you thought that these technologies were rising above the fray, were getting more and more popular? What do you think led you to that conclusion?
I think this whole idea that there's about a million applications out there, many of which seem to do the same kind of thing, and that in order to interact with them, you've got to sort of take the initiative. You've got to say, oh, I'm going to write a review of this restaurant. Or, oh, I'm going to update the fact that there's an accident on Route 93. There's too much being asked, potentially, of the end user. And frankly, we're fundamentally lazy, right? We believe in the principle of least effort. So any of these applications that can, in a sense, allow us to just go about our daily lives and yet contribute to and get back from those services, I think, is bound to be a winner.
Yeah, you're probably right. There's so much technology pinging us every day that we don't know what to become involved in. We don't know what to pick is going to be useful to us. So something that doesn't require us to do much, but yet we can benefit from the information, does seem to be more of a winning combination.
I think, you know, sort of trying to spin this forward, where are we going to see these kinds of things popping up? I think anything that involves RFID kinds of things, where information can be gleaned just as you pass a tool across a car, or other ways of capturing that information without the user having to do anything, are going to be just incredibly valuable. So why don't you propose one of your own?
Okay. So I took it from a different tact, although we're on the same kind of lines of using communications as a foundation. I took it from a more of a 20,000-foot level or 40,000-foot level, however you want to look at it. And I came up with WiMAX. And the reason I think that WiMAX may impact us, although we don't necessarily think of it as being anything related to what we do, it's kind of a new technology, and is that more people want access to information, more people who don't have access perhaps to Wi-Fi. WiMAX is a broadband technology, reaches over longer distances, a different 802 standard, and such that it will be bringing more information, faster data rates to potentially more people. It's not widely accepted right now, but has the potential to facilitate geospatial technology throughput or interaction, however you want to put it, but reaching more people. I just feel that our mobility may be compromised if we don't get more of the more of this type of foundation, this type of an infrastructure in place. So if we're looking at impacting a broader community of geospatial technologists, the only thing that I see that will facilitate that is something that gets out there from a telecommunications infrastructure.
I think the big excitement over WiMAX is that it sort of fills in the holes where there isn't Wi-Fi and where the cell carriers don't have towers. I guess this idea that WiMAX is going to fill in all those holes and provide us with a continuous set of information. And I have to believe that folks are already looking at how to use those WiMAX signals to locate people just like we do with regular Wi-Fi.
And one of the things that caught my attention were some of the things that like you said, people are looking at. And if we're going to talk about navigation, one of the things they're looking for is WiMAX in cars. And so I did a little bit of background checking on that. And, of course, there again is an application where you're filling in the holes. You're not going to have Wi-Fi access everywhere you drive, you know, streaming down navigation information, traffic information by WiMAX is one of the things that is being looked at.
That makes a whole lot of sense to me.
So you got a second one? You want to tell us about the second idea you had?
I do, and this one, I guess, is sort of already more accepted, or certainly is in the news, and that's cloud computing. And that's kind of a broad term, and I actually, in thinking about it, I actually went and looked up why it's called cloud computing. And it's called cloud computing because when you make those diagrams that sort of have the internet in the middle, you draw it inside of a little cloud. And so that's why they call it that.
Yeah.
But basically, it's this idea that your data, your services, any kind of thing that you might need to do technically need not live locally. It can live out in the cloud. And again, we're starting to see use of that very slowly in geospatial. And I keep pointing to WeoGeo just because they were sort of the first technologists that took advantage of this for a geospatial application. WeoGeo is built on Amazon's cloud idea, the Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud, which is called EC2. And basically, it allowed the company, which is very small, to have a great idea, not have to worry about hosting, not have to worry about scalability, not have to worry about uptime or downtime. They just built the app and they run it on Amazon servers. And I think that's incredibly appealing in the geospatial marketplace because of a few things. One, of course, is this whole scaling issue. I mean, what if we get an app that's really, really hot and all of a sudden everybody uses it? We've got to be able to grow that fast. Well, most smaller companies don't have that kind of server farm. They don't even have the knowledge to implement it. Second of all, in geospatial, we have incredible amounts of data. I mean, if you're trying to host remotely sensed data, and giant networks for navigation, let alone all this user-generated content, the reviews of restaurants and these little notes that we're going to leave in space for other people to find, you're going to have to be able to scale very quickly as people add more information. So I think this is just a real natural for geospatial. And clearly, it's becoming real beyond Amazon. Google stepped into the ring just recently with the Google App Engine that does sort of the same kinds of things. So I think that's going to be something that we're going to be seeing an awful lot more use of in geospatial, and I think more and more companies are going to be launching things in the cloud versus launching them elsewhere and then moving them to the cloud.
You know what comes to mind when you see cloud computing is software as a service. Just because it's out there, you're going to grab pieces of it. Do you see that the same way?
Yeah, in fact, it's sort of the same kind of idea, whether it's hosted by an Amazon or a Google or by you, but it's provided as a service. All those things seem to knit together. In fact, I saw the term cloud services that refers directly to software as a service. So I think that's a natural. And the other important thing I think about cloud computing and geospatial is that cloud computing is generic. There's nothing that Amazon did to be special that's going to be special just for geospatial. It makes geospatial just another application that can run in the cloud. And I think it's significant maybe to note that the one company that was looking at very specialized solutions for geospatial data was a company called Sands, and they had a subsidiary called Earthware, and it was all about storage of data and management and so forth. And Sands actually went bankrupt recently, and the Earthware part was sold off to another company. So I think part of the challenge there may have been that it was so specialized, but this is really generic cloud computing.
Right.
Okay, what's your last submission?
Well, I have to say that I cheated on this one, and it goes back to another infrastructure. I'm just going to throw out databases. And I say I cheated because when I looked at just database technology, I'm not convinced that we're fully engaged with moving data into a spatial architecture. And with the onslaught of SQL Spatial, of course the past with Oracle Spatial, the not in the ring yet offerings by IBM, and the relative silence of the MySQL Spatial element, I just got the feeling that in the future, and remember, our scope was the next 12 to 24 months of what could affect the technology. I just feel that the products that are there now will begin to be more formally introduced, will be more heavily relied upon than what we may have previously seen. And given that Microsoft is just entering the ring, and we understand that there are a lot of people who already use SQL for storing spatial data types, but not yet in this feature set, that this could add more competition to the market, that we could see more technology development for spatial databases. And I just see that as something that will be more impactful within the next 12 to 24 months.
Okay. I would agree. It's sort of cheating, but I think it's a really valuable topic to discuss in this context. What do you think it is that's going to need to happen in the next 12 to 24 months that's going to sort of flip the switch from the sort of usage level that we have now to a much higher usage level? What's the barrier that we haven't been able to get through?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm not sure I can I've got the answer. However, it may be price competition. I'm wondering if what will enter the market, you know, from Microsoft's side will put increased pressure on Oracle to lower prices, to lower the price of their modules. And I think we're already seeing some of that movement in terms of how much is in Oracle Locator versus how much is in Oracle Spatial, you know, what's being delivered with standard Oracle. And then what is going to be delivered with standard SQL, which will be, I believe, if, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, that will be just included, those two feature types will just be included with SQL. So the fact that it's bare, maybe for a little or no extra cost, I think will spur more people to at least try it.
Well, I think the price issue is certainly one to keep an eye on. I think we also haven't seen the huge leap that we might see in simplifying moving data into the database. You still got to know an awful lot to do that. And I'd love to see somebody come up with a tool that sort of looks at your data and says, okay, here's probably the best way to do it, to set it up in whichever of the spatial solutions you pick, and it just loads it in there, and off you go.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it when you talked about cloud computing, which is you've got all of these different data types out there just kind of floating around. You know, what is it that I need to optimize my database? How much of my raster data imagery do I include in a database? How much, you know, the vector stuff? So you got a lot of stuff sitting out there. I like the fact that yeah, if we could have somebody analyze the data that we've got and somehow already understand what should be optimized, because it takes quite a bit of tuning in order to really optimize the performance of the databases, and that's a problem.
What you just described is a wonderful software as a service. People would pay for that. Well, that's all the time we have, and we've given you four interesting technologies that we think are going to impact geospatial technologies in the next 12 to 24 months. We are anxious to hear what you listeners think we should add to our list, so please do let us know your ideas. You can add them as a comment on the Directions Magazine article page. You can leave them as a comment on All Points blog, or you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com. Now, before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that WEAR 2.0 is taking place in Burlingame, California on May 12th to the 14th. You can visit the ESRI booth, that's number 2, to learn how to go beyond mashups to solve real-world business problems. For more information, visit www.esri.com/directionsmag. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next week, and be sure to tell a friend.